This episode of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org.
You're listening to Trek FM.
Theo Greyhawk.
Hello and welcome to another Cup of Earl Grey, Trek FM's dedicated podcast to the next generation. I am your weapons master, Richard Marquez, and joined with me is weapons trainee Amy Nelson and torpedo man Justin Ozer. How you guys doing?
Doing great and looking forward to getting my training complete. So you guys have a huge task to inform me and let me know of all of these weapons going on.
Wait. Don't give it away.
Oh, darn it. That's why I'm the trainee. Can't trust me with anything.
How you doing over there, Justin?
I'm good, but did I get demoted? You know, in the role-playing game, I was a lieutenant, so what is going on here?
Think of it as a secondary job. There you go.
Okay, I could try to accept that, but no, but you are the weapons master of the three of us, for sure.
But before we go into that, we have some exciting news that I don't know if I could keep Justin down from not talking about it. So I think we need to say something about it. So Justin, what is the big news?
Yeah, well, of course, listeners might remember that Amy and I were there at Star Trek Las Vegas this year when it was announced by Patrick Stewart there will be a new Picard series. And there have been like little bits of news that have come out, but I think something really significant I wanted to make sure listeners were aware of and that we talk about a little bit here is they're basically saying they're going to start shooting on the show in the spring and release the first episodes late 2019, which I take to mean December, a year from now. So I think that's really exciting. We didn't know how long it would take. I think we're all really excited about the series, and that it'll be just a year away is fantastic. I'm just so excited about it to see new 24th century Trek. How about you, Amy?
Yeah, like I said, we were there and the excitement that overcame the entire convention, like It was wildfire and everyone was just amped up. And so to have this actual debut time frame is so exciting. I don't want to think that late means December. I want late to be September. But
that would be nice, probably, but I think that it's possibly more likely that it's December, because if the shooting schedule is anything like Discovery, like for season two, I think they started shooting in April of this year and it premieres in January. So, you know, there's a little 7, 8, 9 month little window that it takes. So, yeah, absolutely. I would love it if it was sooner, but I do want them to take their time. But we can get there, right?
Yes.
But I think it's not a specific date, but just saying, you know, late 2019, sure, it could be moved a little bit. But I mean, they've been doing, it was announced 4 months ago. They've been doing stuff in the writer's room for a couple of months now, where we've seen there was even an image of Patrick Stewart in the writer's room, you know, being engaged there. And so they've been working on it for a while. So I think it's not too long before we'll get casting announcements and have an idea of what it's like and shooting and trailers and all that kind of stuff next year. So I think that's super exciting. What do you think, Richard?
Yes.
I'm definitely excited for it. I mean, just like Discovery, I'm not, you know, pinning all my hopes on it or, you know, or expecting, you know, anything, but yeah, it should be quite exciting to get another series besides Discovery, and hopefully they do a fantastic job. I mean, as always, you know. So,
yeah. I mean, it's It's going to be the first series to premiere with 24th Century Stuff since Voyager in 1995. So it's been a while since we've had time to look forward to a premiere of 24th Century Trek. So I think it's, yeah, I'm excited just for that. I don't know what they'll do, but I think I'll love it. We'll see.
Yeah.
But yeah, and listeners, you know, we wanted to just put that in there because we haven't really talked about it very much for the last 4 months. But certainly as there's more news or things that we want to talk about, we'll talk about it a little bit here and keep you informed.
Well, that's exciting. So, and I'm like, we can't wait until that premieres and actually gets released. So until then, we'll just have to wait and speculate. So, but before then, or until then, we're going to have to talk about something that Amy, I'm sure, really loved. I mean...
Yes, let's continue.
Yes.
So, obviously, she's excited. I can't hold her down either. But we're going to be talking about... we're going to talk about the Babel Conference feedback from Earl Grey 255. That will be badass Troy moments, other words known as Amy's favorite episode.
Yes, we could do a whole nother episode with the comments that we got. So very happy that the listeners commented and shared your badass Troy moments.
Are you saying we should be doing like postcards for the just for this specific episode?
Just for this one, yes.
Right on. Well, before we do that show, Justin, why don't you start us off?
Yeah, so Lewis Adams says, great listen. I'm glad you included Voyager moments in there. I agree with what was said. Troy is an underrated character. It was mentioned that she would be a good captain, and I agree with that. I think it would be an interesting development if Troy is to factor into the Picard series. Yeah, so thank you for that comment, Lewis. I think as you could tell from the episode, like the very first thing was a Voyager pick from Richard, and I had my own Voyager picks. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we were just really happy to do that and just like... break the boundaries of TNG because Troy is more than just that. And I think I had mentioned she'd be a good captain. That would be great. It would be great if Troy is in the new Picard series, but I'm not really having any expectation because like for that series, if it's Picard and some new characters that we'll come to know and love, I am totally good with that. So, I mean, it would be great, but if not, I won't be disappointed. Although I'm sure Amy would be over the moon if there was Troy in the Picard series, right?
Yeah, consistently. I mean, I can see cameo appearances from everyone. And, you know, of course, I would love if Marina Sirtis was there. But I don't really see her being a main character, but definitely some cameos. I'd be elated.
If there is a cameo, the first time that she does, you will hear Amy all the way from Las Vegas, all the way around the world.
Squealing and shouting and...
No one panic, right?
Okay, yeah, let's not get your hopes up too much. Let's keep going.
Yeah. Well, Rob Chapman said, great episode as always. Here are some of my top Troy badass moments. Troy standing up to Commander Torrith in face of the enemy. Troy taking the helm and landing the Enterprise-D as safely as possible in Generations. And Troy facing her attacker head-on and using Shinzon's telepathic violation of her as a weapon against him to enable the crew to defeat him. All great picks. I especially appreciate landing the Enterprise-D as a badass moment because I truly believe that. And I think in your comments, you were talking like about Shinzon's telepathic violation and how it was her choice. She wasn't asked to do that, that she volunteered. And that just makes that an even more badass moment. So thank you, Rob.
Yeah, thank you, Rob. We'll be sending you your membership card in the Troy Safely Landed the Enterprise D Club.
Yes.
Which is me and Amy and you and some others.
Yeah, Bill and Dan from Trek Geeks are not in this club.
Along with a number of others, but yeah.
I'm amongst good company. No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm just messing.
Come on, let's keep Amy happy here.
All right, fine. Well, Kay Frick said, great discussion on some of the best Troy moments. I'm so glad that you included the Voyager episodes. They are my favorite for her. And I completely agree with that because they're one of my favorites, too. Because, you know, really, Oh, and mostly because I love that uniform that she's in. I mean, mostly that's what I really love about it. But I mean, put that aside. I mean, she really did a good job on both of those episodes that are in Voyager. So
all three episodes.
All three. That's what I meant.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. Yeah. I mean, we already said it, but it's so good, and I'm so glad she was on Voyager and they used her so well. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so Stefan Ringlein says, great episode. Some badass moments I wouldn't have thought of. One of my personal badass moments for her that came to my mind is from The Price at the very end when she uncovers the cheater Rahl and his game. Troy is a great character and Marina Sirtis is a great actress. You know, Stefan, that's a great pick that we didn't even think about, and that's the episode where there are these negotiations for this Barzan wormhole, and there's this, he's a Betazoid, right?
Yes.
Rahl? Yeah.
The negotiator.
Yeah. And she uncovers what he's doing, and he loses out in the end. So definitely great moment.
Big time, yeah. It is. That's a great pick, and yeah, I did not remember that, so great to have that.
So now that Justin was able to get his great news out, and now Amy's gotten her great news out. Now it's my turn. So, as we told you guys last episode, what we're gonna do for this week, we're doing Weapons of TNG. Now, obviously, this is a very, very broad subject, so we're gonna be we're gonna try to wrangle this as much as we can, or as best we can. So I guess a discussion is what we're going to be doing.
I mean, we can't talk about every weapon, but we can talk about certain aspects or questions because I was looking on Memory Alpha. There's in Star Trek hundreds and hundreds of different weapons and things. And
And
we're just going to talk about TNG, not stuff that only appears outside of it, right?
Well, I mean,
maybe you will.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, for the most part, I mean, they're all in the same universe. I mean, everything from TNG Beyond would be, or at least in the same time frame.
It's amazing how many weapons Voyager has, because I was like looking some of them up and I'm like, there's another one from Voyager and another one from Voyager and another one from Voyager. So that was quite interesting. Yeah.
Well, at least we know that Voyager was well armed. So,
and facing some well armed adversaries too.
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
When you think of weapons, what do you think of when it comes to TNG?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's kind of interesting because before I was thinking about this topic, if I think of weapons on TNG, like one of the big things that I think about is the phaser, the handheld phasers that they have. And that's an evolution from what you see in the original series. One of the things I think that affects the feel of Star Trek just in general, because I think this is fairly consistent across all the iterations, is that you have these weapons that on the Federation side, just talking about now, that can harm and kill people, but there's also a stun setting, which is something like in our own world that we don't really have quite the equivalent or in quite a clean's maybe not the word, but like quite an effective way where it's like you can just stun someone, they're disabled, they're unconscious, there's no threat from them for a while. So I think it's an interesting, I know Richard will probably have some, our weapons master has some things to add, but these are just my thoughts for now that you can correct me on. But like that, for me, that affects it because like when we think of weapons in our own world, like if they're used, like someone is getting like harmed in some way, sometimes permanently or killed or whatever. So that's actually the first thing that comes to mind. They have a stun setting and then it's the Federation policy to set things on the stun setting so you can stun people and only kill them if you have to. So That's just my first thought.
Obviously, anyone can be killed by a non-lethal weapon. And what I mean by non-lethal is beanbags, rubber bullets, CS gas.
Those, the ones that electrocute you.
Oh. You're talking about tasers?
Tasers.
Yeah, that's
a fun experience. To get tased. Or you could use tasers too. I mean, obviously anyone can die from those as well. Obviously taser, heart attack, rubber bullets, it could penetrate the skin. And same thing with beanbags and can cause actual damage depending on how close you are. But like, I get it. It would be nice to be able to switch ammo like that and create a non-lethal versus lethal and all that kind of stuff at will. You could just, it'd be like a setting on the actual weapon. But unfortunately, you have to carry multiples. So,
yeah. But yeah. I mean, that's something that's different in Star Trek, where it seems like pretty much they have a guaranteed method, a non-lethal method to just stun you or disable you and deal with you that way. Right?
Well, that's definitely the benefit of having an energy weapon. You know what I mean? Like, it could be a low setting like shock versus a high beam that'll just take off your limbs or something like that. I mean, I guess that's probably the good thing about energy weapons.
Yeah, because you can modulate the energy. Yeah.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. But when I think of weapons, it's very clean, or at least when we talk about Federation, it's a very clean look for their weapons. I don't think you ever really see them dirty. I mean, I think
probably there may be a few places in DS9, but overall, it looks like they've just like polished and cleaned their weapon.
Absolutely, yeah. Obviously, we're talking about TNG, not DS9, but exactly. Yeah. You're right. No, we see dirty weapons in DS9, but not TNG.
Not really, and I assume like they've just like taken it off whatever charger that they have, and they're like, okay, ready to go.
So I mean
it's a very like clean kind of thing, I guess, in that way. But I mean, it can still do a lot of damage at the highest setting.
right, absolutely. So Amy?
Yeah, so when I think about weapons of TNG, of course, the first one that comes to mind is the hand phaser. Mm-hmm. And one thing that, you know, as I was thinking about this, not everyone is issued a phaser that's the assumption that I'm under. I mean, we have families on board.
Yeah.
So it's only those who need to have access. And I like that. And I like how it feels safe on board. And when they go to specific missions, that's only then when we see the rifles. The phaser rifles. So everything can be handled with a phaser most of the time. And I like that they have those different settings. I'm sure we'll talk about the different types of phasers, but you know, I have a hand phaser replica.
Oh, yes, it doesn't work like in Star Trek, right?
I'm not supposed
to
say it's a toy. But you know,
I thought you were gonna say
I was
like
just
phaser.
Given
like, you
one.
Have a phaser?
Wow.
Well, I was just given one actually this year. As you know, I have a huge collection at school, and people keep giving me stuff. And I got one this year.
Is it like the bigger?
So I'm very happy.
The bigger one, like the what,
yeah,
type
it's
two?
The Type 2 okay. phaser, mm-hmm. and
the Dustbuster. One?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, by our associate producer, Norn Lau. So,
nice.
Props to him. But one thing that I always, every single time, I can't help it, but I'm like, when they grab for their rifle or phaser, I'm like, is that Velcro? How is it? Because those uniforms have no pockets, and it always,
yeah,
I'm like, is it a belt?
It seems to come from nowhere, but you do.
I know it does.
But I think you do see, maybe it's a little inconsistent, but I think there are some seasons where you do see they have like a little kind of pouch on the side, one for a tricorder and one for a phaser.
Like a utility, is it a belt or is it just like pockets Velcroed on?
I think there's belt. I don't remember seeing a belt on because I think of like someone holstering it, it's Riker.
You know what? Maybe I'm thinking of DS9 because definitely on DS9 they have like a little like pocket on the side, one for the tricorder and one for the phaser. And like Kira in her Bajoran uniform definitely has a pocket for her phaser. Maybe I'm thinking of that.
Well, I know that they have like these little cups, you know, like it goes in, like the little holsters.
A cup holder.
But I never can see how is it staying on their uniforms. Anyways, that's just me and my thing. But every time I see it, I'm always looking. I'm like, how is that?
Magnets.
But another. Go ahead.
Magnets.
Magnets.
Oh, magnets. That could be. That really could be. And another thing that is interesting to me that I think about, like when you're, you know, comparing to what we have now, like with a gun, you have to have bullets and there is X number. So you're going to run out. But with these phasers and these energy things, like Are they ever going to expire?
Yes. I mean, I think it's not very often that you see it because it can take a while, but I think there are, I don't know if there's even references in TNG, but definitely elsewhere in Star Trek, it can get drained. So I assume it's almost like our cell phones and iPads and devices like that now, like you have to charge it at night after you use it. But I mean, it is the kind of thing, like as long as it has charge to it, it can keep discharging energy for a certain period of time. I don't know how long, but
I would assume it's the same as DS9 that we see, you know, that they handed out battery packs or energy packs.
Oh, yeah. There's like a little energy pack.
Did they call it energy packs or battery packs?
Energy packs, yeah.
Yeah.
Energy packs.
Okay. There you go.
I mean, in a DS9, they have like those weapons lockers, so I wonder if they get charged in there kind of thing, maybe. I don't know.
And another thing that I like is the continuous beam, that it's not pew, 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 you know? So yeah. I like that it's a beam, you know, that you can fire and, you know, like, because they use it to close or open doors, you know, or to blow up rocks to get a passageway. Yeah. Like, that continuous beam, I think, is, I really like that aspect.
It's also the most non-tactical thing to do, too.
Well, but one thing I want to point out is that it's also one of the more unrealistic aspects of Star Trek, because when you have like an energy beam like that, if you think about it like a laser beam, like a laser pointer that you might have in a classroom, you don't see it like a big long red beam. You don't see anything until it actually hits the screen, until it hits something in between and you see like the little red dot on the screen. So,
well, unless you've got that smoke.
Yeah. No, that's the exception. If you have like smoke or fog or something like that to hit it, you would see that continuous beam. But like in a clear environment where there isn't that thing, you wouldn't actually see it that way. You would just see it when it hit the target. But for us as viewers, like you can see like where it's going or what's happening, right? But actually, that would not happen in real life.
Well, yeah.
But I like that too. It's kind of but for the Federation phaser, you can see it's like this continuous beam. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that was one of the criticisms from the new Kelvin timelines, was that their guns were pew pew pew.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I mean, although there's possibly an argument to be made that if you had it that way as opposed to the continuous beam, it would drain it
faster.
Yeah, it would drain it faster if it's a continuous beam. But
right.
But yeah, it's different than what you see in like TOS and TNG.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
But I do have, I know this is off topic because we're not standard orbit, but I did last year get one of those guns from Into Darkness, the one that spins around. Mm.
Okay.
Yeah.
The metallic one or the plastic one?
Uh-huh. Oh, it's plastic.
Well, no.
It's
toy. So the one I'm talking about is there's two versions of it. Obviously, there's the movie replica, and then there's the other one that's like it's like blue and orange.
Blue and red, or because it switches around.
No. I mean the body of it is blue, not the.
It's silver.
So it's the movie version color. Or movie replica. Yeah. Yeah, there you go. I was just like, because I have the it's basically a kid's toy for the movie. Uh-huh. You know, it's, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was like $40 and or something like that. It came with a tricorder or something like that. But like, yeah, where the movie version's like, ooh, that's a lot. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it sounds like what we tend to think about first is the hand phaser, especially the bigger one. There is also the type one that's like the small palm one that you tend to see more in early seasons of TNG, where it's like the little one. But
yeah,
I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but interesting thing on TOS with like they have the type two phaser, which is the one that you usually see. But then inside of it, there's like a little type one that you rarely see. There's actually like one inside of the other, which I think is an interesting idea.
It's the type one phaser that you see in TNG. Yeah. It's like,
yeah,
built
pretty
in.
Much. Pretty much that it's built in there. But it's not built in the same way in TNG where the type one's inside the type two, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
But
I just think
so when did they start using the type two, the fancier one? Do we know?
When you say fancier, do you mean the TNG one?
The one with the handle.
The one that has the buttons.
The buttons? Are you talking about the handheld from TOS, or are you talking about the...
Okay, so on our outline, it says type 2 phaser, and there's two images.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's okay. So the first one is from earlier, I think from first season, and the second one is from third season. It's still a type 2, but they just redesigned it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so third season on is, that's the one
that's the one that you tend to think of is yeah, the one that has like the little buttons that you press. Yeah, or more buttons. Yeah. So
that's a nifty little thing.
It is kind of nifty, and it looks pretty interesting.
Yeah. I wonder what they designed that off of. I mean, obviously we joke and it's looks like a dustbuster when you look at it, but I mean, I wonder if that was the actual, you know,
if that was the inspiration.
Yeah, cuz a dustbuster existed back then, right? In the early 90s? Yeah.
I think so. Yeah.
But it wasn't handheld. Or was it handheld? I don't know. Off topic, you know, we're not talking about clean supplies.
Wow, yeah, let's talk about dustbusters.
You know, but I've always been impressed with the phaser rifle.
Yeah.
And I think that they are pretty awesome looking. And it seems like so much more powerful. Did they have settings on that one as well, or is that just one? Because that one did as well.
Yep,
I think that had different settings too.
Just like this, just like the phaser. Yeah, I think I want to say that that thing has an actual on the front. It has a front side and a back side post. And what I mean by post, I mean
like a grip.
Sights. No, sights.
Oh, the sights.
So you can
okay,
aim,
yeah.
You know, sort of like a sniper sort of thing, but you can aim it longer, I guess, a marksman.
And I think it has different settings, because you could have the continuous beam, you could have like the bolt that comes out, and you could also have what they call the expanding energy pulse, which I think you see in DS9 when they're like searching for the founders. There's like this energy pulse that they can just, it's much more powerful, it seems like, for those serious situations or for combat, really, where they, where it's like ground combat or something, it seems like, right?
Yeah, and it seems like that these phaser rifles, that they are more locked up, that they are, you know, in cabinets, or that they're in the little suitcase that Picard's going to go haywire with. And, you know, so he's going to grab these phaser rifles. But like they seem to be less accessible, whereas phasers are like, okay, let me just go get a phaser.
Yeah, it does seem a little more locked down.
Well, I guess it kind of goes in line with, you know, like security officers, like, well, obviously in the real world, that is, you know, having pistols versus, you know, a rifle is far more intimidating than a pistol is, or because, you know, you don't want to mess, you know, it's sort of like you don't want to mess with those guys over there, you know, but you still don't want to mess with them. But I'm just saying, you don't want to mess with them at all. They've got that rifle that's slinged on them. So for sure. I mean, that's, or at least that's how I see it. I mean, that's how I see the rifle. I mean, obviously it's more, you know, it's like you said, you know, it's more for ground combat, and you know, you're only, you know, that you're expecting, you know, to basically take fire and
And I think it's something we actually rarely see in TNG, especially during the seven seasons, but you see a lot more in DS9 as they get into the war, right? It's more like
one thing that I noticed, that the phaser rifles tend to be, not tend to, but a few times they have been part of the storyline where, you know, we have these Federation laser rifles, and so we're selling to one side or the other, that they're getting them illegally and, you know, without, you know, Starfleet or Federation's knowledge. And it's like, that seems to be more in line with the plot of an episode, versus the phaser is more of a prop, you know?
I could see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's been a couple times when it's like, you know, that's why, like, Newground, I'm thinking, it's like, no, we don't like you, Federation, because you're supplying, you know, the other side with weapons. And they're like, no, we're not. And they're like, yeah, because here they are, and open up a big case of phaser rifles. Yep. And,
Yeah.
So I like that they're used that way.
Is it? Yeah.
I mean,
for the
plot. For the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Federation weapons are obviously not the only ones that are in TNG. So do you guys see, I mean obviously every non-Federation weapon that we see seems to have a theme. You know, obviously, you know, all of them look the same pretty much. You know, the bigger the weapon gets, you know, it kind of reflects their ship. Or at least early. That's what I've noticed. But like, are there important differences between Federation and non-Federation weapons, including the types and how they're used, or do you guys see a obviously you see a difference, but but like when they're being used, that is.
Yeah, I mean, besides the design, I think for a lot of them, there's this special class of weapons. So they're not phasers. A lot of them are disruptors, which I think were taken to mean that it's can be much more powerful. Oftentimes, they don't have or want to use a stun setting. It's really about harming you or killing you. So I think it really impacts what you see as their philosophy toward those things. It's not like, you know, try to stun and not kill. It's like, we need to do some damage in this situation. And the disruptor is kind of a special designation of weapon. I don't know if it's really explained on screen, but I always took it to mean like the phaser is directing energy at you in order to like disable you with the stun setting, or maybe it'll, you know, kill you because it'll disrupt your functions. Well, maybe disrupt's not the right word. It'll just interfere with make your heart stop or whatever, right? But I feel like with the disruptor, a lot of times it's about really doing some serious damage to like disrupt your whole system or disintegrate you. That's what it seems like.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Richard, what a great point. I don't know why I never saw it, but you are right. Those disruptors mirror their ship. I totally love that. I mean,
it
looking
does,
at the Romulan,
it? It
the
Romulan one and the
it
Klingon
does.
One.
That Romulan disruptor, that is so Romulan. And the Klingon, like, it. That is a great point. I'm going to enjoy weapons so much more when I watch TNG. One thing I remember, the DVD sets that came out for TNG before the Blu-ray, so the DVD, and they had those extra features. And I can still remember them talking and how they were building the prop for the Klingon disruptor. And like they were brushing it to make it look more worn and not as clean and crisp as the Federation, because the Klingons, that their weapons were older and, you know, had more use, obviously, with the Klingons and stuff. But whenever I see the Klingon, I'm like, how does, to me, it just doesn't even look like it would work. That's probably the most fake and unrealistic one. I really like the Romulan ones, but the Klingon ones, I'm so sorry for a ray gun or whatever, phaser gun. It doesn't work for me. I don't see how it works.
And I think I'm trying to remember, for those Klingon disruptors, I think we first really see them in Star Trek III. So it's not something that's introduced in TNG, but yeah, it does seem like something, and I always wonder about these things, including the phaser, like, you know, it's only so big and yet it's harnessing this incredible amount of power. Like, how is it that it harnesses that power? How is it that, you know, it doesn't like heat up and burn your hand when you use it because it's just so powerful? That's what I wonder, but I could see that about the Klingon one. It just, and I think even in the early episode, Heart of Glory, like they put together a Klingon disruptor from like a few pieces they have like in their uniform.
That's right.
So it's like, oh, a couple spare parts leads to this immensely powerful disruptor. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, I know which episode you're talking about. Yeah. They get past all the security. You know, every time I think of that, it's, what is that movie with Kevin Costner where he's trying to save the president and the guy makes the weapons out of plastic. Mm-hmm. Oh, I can't remember the movie.
That has John Malkovich in it, doesn't it?
What's that?
Has John Malkovich in it?
I think so. Yeah.
And he gets past like the metal detector because like the gun is made of something non-metallic, and then he has like the bullets inside this little thing that
the
like,
rabbit,
it's, like a little
rabbit's
foot thing.
Like that.
Yeah, yeah. And so he just puts it aside like it's coins from his pocket. You couldn't do that today, but you could do it back then.
Right.
So yeah, I think about that too, like trying to get through the security with something that wouldn't expect.
Man,
yeah.
I hope the aliens that we meet out there don't watch some of our movies.
They're like,
that's in the line of
in
fire.
In the line of fire. Yes.
Yeah, that's it.
Yes.
I don't remember seeing
that. That's a great movie. That's a great movie. I love that movie. Anyway, we're not talking about that. So no, but like whenever I look at like the Romulan disruptor, obviously it looks very sleek and it's small. It it's very...
Well, except it has this big, like, open loop for you to grip, but the rest of it's kind of...
But yeah. That's what I love, because it almost sort of protects your hand from getting, you know, it's a defense, I think, and it mirrors their ship.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I meant the disruptor, not the rifle. But, like, you know, I mean, regardless, I mean, even the rifle is compact and small, and, you know, if you had a jacket on, you could easily conceal that. I mean, or at least... That's what it looks like.
The Romulan disruptor rifle. Yeah.
Right. Whereas like the Klingon disruptor, it's like it's a mirror of their ship. I mean, it looks intimidating. It looks like a smuggler's weapon is what it looks like. I mean, we hear about, you know, smugglers in Star Trek, I can't think of episodes off the top of my head, but you always see like a Klingon disruptor or you see something Klingon. Apparently they're ready and available, so, you know, they're just lying around.
Yeah, I mean, in fact, let me see, I think it's the DS9 episode where O'Brien is undercover and has to do with the Orion Syndicate. I can't think of the name, but they're dealing in Klingon disruptors, aren't they?
That's right.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Apparently they're easy to get a hold of.
Easy to get a hold of, broken. Yeah. Apparently.
Yeah. Broken. Yeah.
O'Brien, can you fix these Klingon weapons? Oh, let me see what I can do. No problem. They're all broken.
They're all broken. Yeah. One of the things, before we started the episode, one of the things that I always quote whenever I talk about
Honor Among Thieves, that's the name of the episode. Sorry.
Is it? Oh, okay. That is right. Yeah, it is Honor Among Thieves. That's right. Whenever I talk about like the differences between Romulan, Klingon and Federation, I always think of, okay, this is outside TNG, but this I think of Return to Grace, DS9 to Return to Grace, and there's a moment in that episode where, wait, how have you gone that far, Amy? You have.
What season is it?
I think it's season 4.
Oh, then I've seen it, if it's season 4.
Let me see.
But you'll have to refresh my memory. I'm not 14. That good.
Okay, so Zial and Kira are on the Klingon Bird of Prey, and she's showing her how to use the weapon, the Klingon Disruptor.
Yes, I have seen that.
And she's showing her the difference between a Federation compression rifle and a Romulan disruptor rifle or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that I always talk about is, like, if we're talking about today, you know, obviously the United States is the Federation and everywhere else is the Klingon and Romulans. So,
wow, that's an interesting statement. Okay.
Well, when you talk about ships and you talk about weapons and all that kind of stuff, because the reason why I say it like that is because she makes a great point in there. Is like, the Federation rifle is accurate and it's consistent, but the second it gets dirty, the second it malfunctions, it's useless. It's a club, basically.
Whereas, maybe that's why we only see them clean. they have to toss it when it gets too dirty.
Hold on, I'm getting to that.
Okay,
but it's the same thing with the standard issued M4 and M16 that the United States and most of the NATO countries use. It's the same thing. You get that thing dirty, it's useless. It's probably one of the most accurate rifles out there, but it's useless when you get it dirty. Whereas a Klingon disruptor, it's durable, it's reliable, it may not be the most accurate, but it's reliable. And that's the same thing with the rest of the world, like the AK-47.
Interesting.
Which is one weapon where you could drop it into a puddle of, well, maybe not a puddle of mud, but dirty water. You couldn't do that with an M4 because it wouldn't really fire. But if you drop it into the water and then pick it up, it will shoot.
Mm-hmm. Huh, so, interesting.
Yeah, just little weapons knowledge from Return to Grace. That's how I picture the Klingon disruptor is. It's a very reliable weapon, but it's not really accurate. But I don't think that's what the Klingons are looking for. They're just trying to create as much damage as they can.
Makes sense. Yeah.
So can we talk about the Ferengi whip? Since we saw that
that is one that we put on here, the Ferengi energy whip.
What kind of design? I mean, who would have thought that? I mean, that doesn't even seem like you're going to be accurate to have this whip thing go and even hit something.
I don't know. Maybe the Ferengi in the 24th century have a fantasy that they're like the 24th century Indiana Jones with the whip. And it's weird.
I'm like, because that whip is going to come back around at you and you don't want it firing at you.
Well, no,
I'm
no,
like,
no. The way that it works is they have this coiled whip and out of the whip comes the energy discharge.
I know. Right? And the coilness of it makes it go everywhere.
The whip of it.
Yeah.
I mean,
like, how does it, maybe, is there a button, like, that he presses? I don't know. It just seems so inaccurate.
I would love to meet the people who actually could time that perfectly so you can whip it out and actually hit someone.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a weird weapon.
Without you getting shot at while you're whipping it around.
But I guess they do have bullwhip contests where they can, you know, snatch things and knock things off. And
yeah.
Where's that at?
So, I mean, I guess in the West.
I know. I'm just kidding.
So, I mean, I guess a whip can be accurate, but it just seems, my goodness, that's just a crazy design. I don't know who ever thought of that.
I mean, it's creative.
It's interesting.
It's for sure creative.
It is very creative.
It's creative and different, but I mean, it's as intimidating as like the Ferengi look themselves. It's just weird.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know how much we'll talk about it, but I mean, there are all kinds of different like hand weapons that are used, including laser weapons and other kinds of things. And there's ship-based weapons and stuff. I don't know how much you want to go into some of that stuff, Richard.
No, we could definitely go into that. I mean, we don't have to dip into it too much. I mean, obviously the focus of Star Trek when it deals with weapons is energy weapons. But obviously we have handheld weapons like the Klingons, which we always see, which I personally love
the. Oh, you mean the blade, all the bladed weapons?
All the bladed weapons. Oh, I love all the blade weapons.
Yeah, and there's quite a few different kinds. I mean, there's the Bat'leth that everybody knows with the kind of two-handed grip. But there's also the Duktag, which is kind of the, I guess it's the like knife. A knife with that has the two little things that poke out. I think that also came from Star Trek III. And they've also got the Mech'leth, which is the small handheld thing. You probably see it most prominently in First Contact when Worf brings it out when he's on the hull of the ship to attack the Borg.
Interesting.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because I like the Mech'leth quite a bit. And since doing my DS9 rewatch, that's the one that Jadzia and Worf go. Mm-hmm. There's an episode where they're fighting and they're
and
like,
they both
you
have
to Mech'leths? Know the Mech'leth and the differences between the Bat'leth. And
right.
I was like, oh, there's definitely advantages. And like, you really understand that the Klingons know their weapons, their purpose, and their advantages and disadvantages, which I think is very wise for anyone who has a weapon should know.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think it's interesting because I've been reading some more Klingon-centric novels, and the Klingons themselves even have these discussions like, I think the Bat'leth is the best because of this. No, the Mech'leth is the best because of this. No, this other bladed weapon is the best because of this. Because there's even, like, they don't give it a name, I think, in TNG, but there's this kind of longsword that Duras has. So they have something that looks more like a sword that we might be familiar with as well. So I don't know, they seem obsessed with the bladed weapons because I couldn't actually find too much else on bladed weapons for any other culture. The Klingons just love them, don't they?
Yeah. Is the Duktag, is that the one that's the ceremonial ritual one Worf wants his son?
No, that actually has a different name. Let me see. I think I have it because I had a longer list that I didn't put on here. It's called
they definitely have like ceremonial weapons.
They have all kinds of stuff. That's the Hegbot. It's the ceremonial knife. But there's other things we see, like even in Birthright, when they go to that place that the Romulans are running with the Klingons, there's like this spear that they have. So they have speared weapons at some point. And there's other kind. There's even in Sins of the Father where the assassins have this thing called a kutluch, which is another kind of knife, basically. So they really go all in on these bladed weapons, and you get the sense that like for them that's like the ultimate if you can be great at combat for that. Like the disruptors, like, yeah, you have to use those when you can, but I'd much rather use a bladed weapon.
Yeah, the hand to hand
is how they feel. Yeah.
You would think that their masters are like disrupting energy weapons and then freaking like, oh yeah, we're gonna go kill them with these knives now, you know, sort of thing. Like, you know, yeah.
It's a tie back to their tradition before they had energy weapons too. Yeah. So yeah. It's for them, it becomes almost like a tie to ancient combat. So right. I think that's
well,
super
but it's
interesting.
Also a reflection of, like I said before, it's a reflection of the ship too. Because I mean, like it's their ships are intimidating. I mean, it's all about getting up close and create as much damage as you can up close, you know, because knives and swords are such a personal weapon because it requires you to be close to them.
Mm-hmm.
But everywhere else is distance, you know, sort of thing.
Yeah. So. Well, and let's not forget the pain sticks either.
Oh.
Yeah, I debated whether to put that in here as a weapon.
Oh, no, we don't
like
need to talk
ritual.
About pain
yeah.
sticks.
Oh. Richard had that last episode.
Yeah, my side's hurting
talked
so.
About
Whoa, my head is about to explode here from talking about all these weapons. But so for the meantime, we're going to be talking about just the phasers and handheld weapons. And you know what? We're going to break this thing into two, and we're going to talk about ships next time because we've gone so long talking about this. And Amy wants another tutoring lesson, or at least that's what she said.
Yes.
So we'll have to come back to this on another time, and I really hope you guys enjoy this. Okay, so before we go, we have a preview of our next episode. Justin, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, so Amy's going to be out next week, but we'll be joined by Kentrip from Standard Orbit. We're going to talk about Captain Jellicoe. So go ahead and watch or rewatch Chain of Command 2-parter and have your thoughts on Jellicoe ready. I think we're going to have a great conversation, right, Richard?
Oh, I am going to have a great conversation. That's for sure. And if anyone doesn't know what's going on, so obviously, if you follow Standard Orbit, you know Ken's Navy and I'm Army. So Army 1, 10 to 17, the Army-Navy game. So that's going to be a great conversation. I'm going to love him on the show. That's going to be great. So go Army.
Yeah, maybe we can decide. Well, I mean, pretty much the Starfleet is the equivalent of the Navy in the Federation, right?
Yeah, I would say so, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. I know Ken's a fan of Jellicoe, so we'll get his thoughts and see what we think about that.
And I'm so disappointed that you're going to miss it, Amy.
I know. I'm bummed, too, because I like Jellicoe.
Okay.
Oh, man, and I really... Ken's okay. No,
Ken's okay.
I love Ken. I love Ken Tripp, and I love Standard Orbit, and I'm so bummed that it's no fair when I'm gone that you guys have fun without me.
Oh, we.
I'm sorry.
No, we don't have that much fun while you're gone.
backpedaling now.
Make it sound like this is Animal House or something like that. We're all throwing toilet paper all over the place and having a good old time.
No, I definitely am looking forward to what you guys have to say about Jellicoe. And yes, I'm sorry, I will not be here for that.
That's okay. We'll do another episode that's really, really fun one of these times.
Okay.
Again.
Okay.
We'll throw
another Troy
our
episode.
Weapons part two.
Oh, okay. There we go.
Weapons part two.
Maybe part two will just be about how Troy uses weapons.
Oh, man. All right, right on. Well, it's been so much fun talking about handheld weapons on TNG today, but this isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on the network. Here's what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Literary Treks.
I just want to sing. After every time I hear the title of this book, I want to sing. A time for war, a time for peace.
Funny story. When this was being pitched at the sales meeting at Simon & Schuster, somebody on the sales force was worried that they'd have to get permission to use the titles because it's a song by the Byrds, and John Ordover, the editor, had to gently point out that it was actually from the Bible and therefore kind of public.
Melodic Treks.
You know, I suppose as being an actor, you know, I just... was really kind of feeling into Clive's character. Okay. And trying to express the emotion of what I felt like he was going through on the sarangi. Mm-hmm. So then it became much more of a personal, individual character. It was how I experienced doing it.
The 602 Club.
But I look at this film as being almost three, maybe four different films. Because when we're in Krypton, it's very sci-fi.
Oh, you mean excuse Krypton. Me, Krypton.
You mean
Krypton. We're on Krypton.
I'm sorry, Marla. Krypton. So when we're on Krypton, it's very much a science fiction movie. Next thing, all of a sudden, we have Kal-El come to Earth, and now it feels very Norman Rockwell. I mean, it's almost like, totally different from what we just saw on Krypton.
To the journey!
Brace for impact.
Brace for impact, yes. Okay, I'm going to make a commitment to myself right now. If I am ever perishing in a plane crash, I am going to say brace for impact right before I die to everyone on the plane.
I will
brace
somehow for impact. Hear it across the miles.
It'll be very dramatic, you know, with some dramatic theme music playing, hopefully, just like we have in Voyager here this episode.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and written review. That helps others to find the show.
If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, Windows Phone, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways you can do that. The best place is to join the larger conversation, the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up.
If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select Earl Grey. That will come right to us, and we might read your email on the show. By the way, listeners, I'm disappointed we got no emails about Troy. Lots of great feedback on the Babel Conference on Twitter, but no emails on Troy, so...
Aw. I'm a little hurt, to be honest with you.
Didn't we?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
That's okay. That's okay. We got lots of great feedback elsewhere, right? But anyway, however you guys want to contact us is fine. If you want to email us, it might be read on the show. That's great. Babel Conference might be read on the show. That's also great. But just wanted to point out, you didn't come through on the emails for about Troy. So sorry.
Watch, we get a ton of emails now.
Like, what? Yeah. Anyway, you can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. So, Richard, where can people contact you when you're not training on your Batleth technique in the holodeck?
I don't know. I might be there a lot. I mean, it's a Batleth, you know, it could be a dagger or even a short sword. I don't know. I might be training on everything. I don't know. We'll see. Well, but when I'm not doing that, you guys can find me on Facebook. I pop in here and there on the Babel Conference. And yes, I am on Twitter, as you probably saw if you're following me for the Army-Navy game. But my handle is xransom. So, Amy, when you're not in the targeting range with Guinan, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me here on the network. I co-host The Edge, which is about Star Trek Discovery with Patrick Devlin. I am on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson doing my Deep Space Nine rewatch, and I am in season 5. It's getting so good. And I am also in the Babel Conference, so you can find me there and always talk Troy with me there. So, Justin, where can people contact you when you're not cleaning your phaser rifle so it will work properly?
Ooh, if it can still be cleaned. I don't know. It got dirty once and I had to throw it away. Well, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at TrekFan4747, where I tweet about nothing but Star Trek. Believe it or not, listeners, when this comes out, I will be tweeting out my season 7 rewatch of The Next Generation. I know it's taken me like 3 months to get through season 6 with how busy I've been. But I'm on season 7, so pretty soon my rewatch of TNG is going to sadly end. I'll have to start another rewatch at that point. So you can find me there, and you can find me hanging around the Babel Conference on Facebook. If you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more, available through our special patrons website, the Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We'd like to take this opportunity to recognize our current associate producers. They are Norman Lau, Justin Ozer, Michael Huter, and Thomas Appel. Thank you for supporting Trek FM, and especially Earl Grey.
So join us next time for another cup of Earl Grey.
Great joy and gratitude.
Kapla!
Woo! Go Army, B Navy!